All right, we'll get going. Members, we have, do we have the bill? I don't have the copy of the bill. All right. Members, they're working this week, as you know, on the clean water bill over in Representative Murphy's committee, and she's asked that we send a recommendation over from our committee on basically House File 2301 that you have in your file is a carbon copy of what was in the Department of Agriculture recommendations, but was not in our omnibus bill going out. And so we're supposed to take basically this money and decide how we would recommend utilizing it and then send it over to Representative Murphy. So I think to be helpful today, there's a couple things we should do. Number one, hear from the department on exactly, I mean, these are pretty broad figures and pretty broad language, exactly on section for section how they're going to spend that money. We probably should have our budget books here, but we don't at this point because there's explanation pages in there, but we'll have them explain it. And then we have a couple amendments that have come from, frankly, both sides of the aisle have talked to me, and we'll discuss those and see if we want to move a couple of those forward as part of this recommendation, then we'll send it out and we are done. So I don't know who's here from the Department of Agriculture. Oh, there he is. Hi, Joe. Joe Martin is coming up. We got two of them. It's a twofer. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Joe Martin, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, any advice on how you want to step through this?
Have you got a copy of the bill?
I do.
Why don't you just go 1, 2, 3, 4 and tell us and just talk about the different pots of money and what you're doing. I mean, number one is 325 and 350 each year. I mean, just talk about what you're doing programmatically. Using Representative Guinius's phraseology, what outcomes are you looking for? You know, what is this going to accomplish? Talk about if it's additional activities or if it's replacing money in the department. That's a question Mary Murphy's committee will be asking as we carry this bill forward, and I want to be able to answer that down in her committee. And the importance of these programs, why you're asking for the money and why you think it's critical that agriculture get these dollars and what they do with it. So it's pretty open-ended, and members, please ask questions on each of these as we go forward, too.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, and thank you. And I believe in a few minutes we'll be having, I apologize that we didn't have a handout for you with some additional information that should be showing up within the next few minutes. I can distribute that also. I guess I would start by saying that I appreciate the discussion in the committee and this bill. These numbers do match the governor's recommendations in terms of the request. As you see, the first request is for $675,000 for pesticide and pesticide monitoring. What this request basically is the department has a long history of monitoring surface waters in the state for pesticide and pesticide degradant and taking actions in certain watersheds and areas where we see problems. The major, logjam right now in terms of additional monitoring is really our laboratories. And what this request is I believe we estimated around $535,000 of this request going for the direct purchase of additional lab equipment. And this lab equipment will allow us to run quite a few additional water samples for pesticide and pesticide degradants, so we'll have a better idea of where there may be some problems and actions that we may need to take. The additional money would be for hiring of two additional people in the laboratory to basically run the equipment.
consult Mr. Martin on the pesticide and pesticide aggregates. Will the equipment then allow you to monitor additional pesticides or chemicals than what you have the capacity to do now, or will it expand your existing capacity to just do more multiple pesticide aggregate testing?
Mr. Chair, if it's all right with you, I would ask Dan Stoddard from our department to discuss more in detail on that.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dan Stoddard. I'm Assistant Director for Environmental Programs in the Pesticide and Fertilizer Division. In response to your question, what we would like to do is purchase the new LC-MSMS, which is a liquid chromatograph with 10 aspects. And the reason I'm going into that detail is that instrument has increased detection capability. So we would expect to be able to run more compounds routinely than we currently do on a routine basis. We already have a couple of these instruments, but we don't have enough to run them for all of our monitoring.
What would be some of the common compounds we might understand that you could have additional capacity for?
Mr. Chair, off the top of my head, I guess we do a common scan or frequent scan for all of the commonly used herbicides like atrazine, acetochlor, Alicor. We also do scans for a lot of pesticides that are not that frequently occurring, but that can be detected with the same method. One of the issues we have with monitoring is that certain methods can only look at different kinds of compounds. And with this LC-MSMS, you would have a longer sweep.
Okay. So basically, number one is $535,000 for lab equipment, and then the balance is for two additional technicians for the laboratory.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Number two.
Mr. Chair, the next request you see is for $1.125 million in the biennium. And what this request, once again, the department has a history of monitoring primarily groundwaters for nitrate contamination. This is an area where we know that we need to do additional work, and we have known that for quite some time. What you see here is this sort of falls under the drinking water aspect of the Clean Water Fund. As many of you know, that the Constitution did require a certain amount to be focused on drinking water activities, and this piece would fall under that in that area. Basically, what our plan would be here is there was 4.25 FTEs that we would potentially program, so that would come to around $710,000, and the remaining $415,000 would be for we envision grants and contracts to directly work with communities that may be experiencing nitrate contamination in their community wells, or even in some private wells. Of the staff work, I know it's quite a few staff that we're proposing, but once again, we know we need to increase monitoring out in the countryside to find out where we may have nitrate problems in our groundwater, and then ramp up our response efforts in those areas where we may see problems, and that would include, you know, promoting best management practices in areas that are experiencing problems. And part of the role that the department really plays where we find problems is bringing people together in communities, whether they're county representatives or the ag input suppliers, the farmers or the water suppliers, to really sit down and try to develop a local strategy that's going to effectively protect their water supplies. If there's any additional technical questions, Mr. Stoddard could also talk about programmatic plans there.
I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Number three.
Number three, you'll see a $2.625 million request. And this is an area for research projects, pilot projects, and technical assistance. In the past, and I believe the handout has gone around, that this would be a good one to look at the handout, to look at some of our past work and what we build on. And while we don't have a specific breakdown on how much would go to research or the pilot projects or demonstration sites, I would say that there is a need We've been engaged a lot in research with the University of Minnesota. We know that there's additional research needed, primarily that there's some pretty significant knowledge gap on the contribution of agriculture and non-point source contribution to impairments. Our research in the past has been focused on refining the load allocations of exactly how much to assign to a certain agriculture practice. And then also, I think that, you know, while we've prescribed BMPs for many years, the science on whether those exact BMPs are effective is somewhat debatable, so we need to get out and actually work in some smaller watersheds and place BMPs to see, are they effective, are they not, do we need to prescribe better BMPs, more precise BMPs. And then I think the other area that's emerging, and I know there's been some discussions in terms of really we need to empirically validate some of these practices that show researchers, show farmers what's happening out there. And that's, you've heard a lot about the discovery farms. That may fit under this area of trying to establish on-farm demonstration sites where we place practices on the land and shown that they're effective in improving water quality. And the last request there is there would be administration. We would envision around $400,000 of that amount being for administration for the department and three FTEs. And that would be, we have one existing FTE who's working on this area. We would propose the funds pay for that existing person, and then two additional proposed FTEs. So one existing, two new FTEs there.
Going back up to number two, those 4.25 FTEs, are they new?
In the drinking water nitrate area?
Yeah.
Yes, they would be.
All right. So the difference between, you talked about BMP and BMP applied research, are those would be more grants in number three as opposed to four that are loans?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And if you want to talk briefly about number four, your BMP loan program, which we're kind of familiar with, but if you can briefly explain what we do there and who the loans go to and what kind of work's being done.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. The Ag BMP loan program has been in existence since 1995. The loan fund has been basically, the money received in the loan fund has either come directly through legislative appropriations or the Public Facilities Authority. The fund right now is capitalized at around $59 million. Without any additional money, we allocate around $10 million a year. And these allocations, we don't make loans directly to landowners, but we allocate the funds to LGUs, whether they be counties or county SWCDs, who in turn work with a local lender and the landowner in financing projects. They may actually, when we have cost share programs of 80-20, this program may be used to finance the 20% of the program. And the areas where we primarily focus on in projects are feedlot upgrades, septic system upgrades, and conservation tillage equipment. And we would envision that the program would basically, we weren't envisioning any program changes, but with this additional money, we have received funds in the past through Clean Water Legacy Appropriations one time for Ag BMP. What we've done is we focus those new dollars into areas that have approved TMDL plans. And right now there are 14 approved TMDL areas. And over the next 2 years, we expect an additional 85 new TMDL areas to be approved, which definitely you're going to see LGU is wanting to do more work on the ground, so this is where the loan program would come into play. And I would just add that admin is pretty low on this program. Like I said, our primary responsibility is allocating the funds to the LGUs, so we would envision only about a half a FTE to work on the increased workload of $50,000.
Okay, any questions to the bill? And then actually I'll move the bill. House File 2301 before the committee right now and recommend it to pass to the Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Committee. That's Mary Murphy's committee. So So the bill's before us. Any questions to Mr. Martin while he's up here on any of the topics he's covered? Representative Faulks.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you just say, on part three, how many FTEs you'd be hiring?
Mr. Chair, it would be three FTEs. It would fund one existing position and two additional.
Representative Paul. Thank you, Mr. Martin. It just seems a little bit excessive to me because we're asking pretty much every other department to do more with less people, and I'm having some issues trying to figure out how we can continue to add staff. I know that we have very qualified people there, and I'm hoping that we could maybe get by with a few less new hires.
Can you talk a little bit about what the two new staff will be doing, what their expertise will be, what you foresee them doing full-time?
Mr. Chair, members, it is difficult decisions when we look at to add FTEs because it is a long-term expense that we're committing to the agency and to the state. But in this area, we'd be granting out a considerable amount of money for individual projects. And really what these folks would be tasked doing is overseeing the money that we'd be sending out to make sure that the deliverables are being met, that the projects are being designed correctly, the outcomes are arrived at, and that we're not just doing research for research sake, or we're not just doing demonstration for demonstration sake, but really facilitating those grants and those projects.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you refresh me on how much, would that the grant money be the same year to year as what's listed in part three, or would it be an increase, or are they giving out more money above and beyond that for some other grant sources? It seems excessive that approximately half of the money would be going in the first year for administrative purposes, and about a fourth of it or a fifth of it in the second year.
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, I think that we, in terms of if we're looking at adding staff in this area, we most likely wouldn't add them in fiscal year 10. We would add them in later years, and perhaps in 11. Mr. Chair, can I get a clarification of the question again?
Sure. Representative Faulks.
Thank you.
Run or buy again.
When you're talking about this grant, can you clarify for me, are we dealing with just the dollar amounts which are listed in point three? And those staff will be just administering those monies, that $875,000 in the first year, $1,750,000 in the second year, of which you stated that $400,000 approximately would be for administration of that total money. So really, if you take $400,000 away from the first year, you only have $475,000 of eligible money for grants, and $400,000 minus taken away from the $1.75 million in the second year, which leaves you $1.35 million for grants. It just seems excessive to me that it takes that much staff and that much money in administration to administer those amounts of grants. I mean, you're basically paying as much in administration as you are in grants the first year. That it seems excessive.
So I guess, and the other question would be is are they administering grants, or are they actually doing some of the research and pilot projects themselves, visiting the sites, doing the work themselves? What job are they doing? What's your administration cost for? It's really what he's getting to.
Mr. Chair, I would, and members, I'd say this isn't staff that are going to be sitting in the office in St. Paul who just sort of send out the money, but to be visiting the sites on a somewhat regular basis to make sure that, you know, we have a responsibility if we're going to be granting dollars out to whether the university or other NGOs to make sure that they're delivering what they're saying they're delivering, and making sure that the projects are basically designed right. So the staff would be involved in pre-design. They would also be involved in when the project's going on. But I think the biggest part of it is outcome. Is how do you push out the information to the public to make it usable and relevant.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just have a question or concern on item 3. And on line 14, it talks about the restoring impaired waters, and that puts a real positive spin on this thing. But my concern is that this doesn't turn out to be people driving up and down township roads, scrutinizing the way farmers farm, and turning into just more of a regulatory methods of the way farmers farm. How do you envision this program actually working?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, in terms of the regulatory side of the equation, obviously the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is the lead on the regulatory aspect. And you know, going back to the prior question, where our staff would be involved, while yes, a lot of their work would be in facilitating the grants, our existing staff member that we have working on this is actually engages the MPCA, the project managers, on a scientific level of looking at the water monitoring data, looking at the PMBL development, and engaging in actual hydrologic discussion. In terms of your concern of us using this money for our regulatory purposes, it's really, I think there's a wall there right now in terms of using this in terms of our regulatory action.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And questions are probably more for Mr. Stoddard relating to the lab equipment anticipated in this bill. How much capacity will this increase the lab at the department in order to test the groundwater for pesticides and so forth?
Mr. Stoddard.
Chair Representatives, we anticipate approximately 600 additional samples per year. Most of those will probably be used for surface water. Some would be available for groundwater, and some would be available for emerging issues.
Representative Szymanski, I don't know if you answered your question. 600 more on top of...
600 additional samples.
Okay.
On top of...
What are you routinely doing now in number of samples?
Chair Representative, currently we do about 900 samples a year. It depends on the year, how wet a year is.
Mr. Chair, if I may continue with a couple more questions. Do other states in the Midwest have comparable equipment? Are they also testing at the level that you anticipate testing for pesticides with this new equipment?
Mr. Chair, every state has a different program. Most states do some monitoring at this point. With respect to the method, we're actually going to adopt something called the Montana method, which has been developed by the Montana Department of Agriculture, I believe, and that uses this instrument and has a more extended suite. But every state does something. They're all a little bit different. I believe our state is doing a very good job relative to most states, but each state is a little different.
Thank you.
And I just follow up Representative Szymanski's question because I think it begs asking not only other states, are there any private labs in the state that has that equipment that would be possible to do it? One of the things I hear, and I'm sure other members, is we keep moving everything into government rather than contracting out these samples actually where they're taken, out in rural Minnesota at some of our private labs around there. And I know there's labs in New Ulm and Denson, and there's a number of labs yet around the state. Do any of those have this equipment that you're trying to utilize? Are you aware of that?
Mr. Chair, off the top of my head, I'm not aware of any, but I'm sure some do. But the advantage to the state having it is method development. Much of what we would want to look at are cutting-edge pesticides, and the analytical techniques are an issue. They are not standard analytical techniques for a lot of these products. And so if we have a lab which specializes in pesticide detection. They're very good at it, and I think there's some real advantages to being able to develop these methodologies.
All right. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the testifiers on the ag BMP loans, what's the typical term of the loan? Because I see it's a zero interest loan, but how long is the loan for?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't directly oversee that program, so I don't know the correct answer, but I believe they're 5 to 8 years, but okay. I can get back to you with the correct answer on that. Cool. I believe that the interest rate usually offered to the landowner is around 2 to 3%.
What does that mean?
So they're short-term or intermediate-term loans, five, six, seven, 8 years, something like that, depending on probably what it is, too.
Mr. Martin?
Mr. Chair, that's my opinion.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, let's, if there's no more questions on the bill, let's move into discussion on some of the amendments. Representative Eakins here. In fact, let's start on that one. If we can get Mr. Jasky down for a little bit. Thank you, guys. Stay close. We might need you again. Eakins got the A3 amendment. We'll start with that. And this one, members, I've been approached by both sides of the aisle, members and multiple members, who have talked about our feedlot assistance money out there. As you know, anyone who registers a feedlot, number one, they have to register, but number two in the state, they have to upgrade it to our new state standards. But our laws require now that they do not have to upgrade until such time as these cost share monies become available. And so we've got a number of feedlots around the state that that do not meet that. And Representative Eakin, maybe you can explain what went on over in Environment Committee, because I know there was some money put forward there, but this addresses, I think, something different.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What happened was, as far as the funding for Bowser, there were the recommendations did include some significant cuts, actually, from what the G16 had been proposing from the Clean Water Fund, and I believe that we do need to get some more money into Bowser, and I think this is a good amendment. I would like to move the amendment, first of all, and to deal with the feedlot issue here. It does, this amendment does prioritize pollution prevention. It also focuses on projects that leverage federal or other non-state funds as well, so it would also leverage outside funding, and I think that's a priority that we should focus on as well. But again, I believe that these programs are important, and this certainly falls, I think, within the jurisdiction of the Agriculture Committee as well.
And Mr. Jasky, maybe you can explain. I know there was funding that Representative Genius's committee recommended for the Clean Water Fund, and then there was some more money, I believe, Representative Hansen put in her bill. Address what those two pots of money are going to, and then what this would be going to.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, John Jasky, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources. Yes, there are appropriations slated for feedlot water quality grants in the base budget bill as well as the Clean Water Fund bill that came out of Representative Genius's committee. Two things that this amendment would do is, one, it would get the amount up to where we've been in the past, so we get to that number. And secondly, as Representative Eakin noted, the language in here is helpful as well, because the language that was attached to the appropriations in the other bills were limiting to animal unit operations under 300 acres as well as to specific sites that already had impairments. And we certainly, you can see the language here talks about prevention too. We have feedlot circumstances where there aren't impaired waters already. At least we don't have the information to determine whether they are. So this would help with that flexibility.
So, members, what I understand, I think Representative Genius allowed her money in the Clean Water Fund for riparian farms that border riparian lakes and rivers, which are obviously very pressing. And Representative Hansen then added the money for areas that are TMDL, they have bad TMDL outcomes, and so those types of watersheds. But I think what Mr. Jasky is saying, what Representative Eakin and others are saying, is that we have a lot of farms that aren't in either of those areas, and they're in all of our districts. And you know, if they're near a tile intake or draining into a ditch or doing other things that may jeopardize the waters, we certainly should look at those just because they're not up against a lake or in a TMDL area. It shouldn't mean we shouldn't address them. Questions to that amendment? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, could you remind me how much money was in Hansen's bill for Bowser, for the feedlot portion in Bowser?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, there was, in the base budget, there was $500,000, as you see here, and in the Clean Water Fund, it was split differently from the first year to the second, and I don't have that in front of me right now, Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, but I can get that to you. And I recall, though, that the The amount, the $500,000 you see here came from basically trying to get the level we were at in the previous biennium for this program, and so that was the math that was done to get to this number.
Representative Torkelson. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then in Wagenius's environment bill, not in your clean water bill, there was some Bowser funds. How many? How much money was there?
$500,000 per year.
$12 million.
Yeah.
This is kind of editorial comment in addition to questioning, but comparing the governor's budget to the Wagenius bill, Bowser was cut $11,125,000. And DNR, comparing the governor's recommendations to the Wagenius bill, DNR gained $7,449,000. While I'm very much in favor of this project, I think it's certainly appropriate, and I think it's a great idea that Bowser be allowed to do this very important work and have the funding to do it. I'm very uncomfortable taking this money out of our ag budget when I think it should be coming out of DNR's budget. I don't know how we can send that message to the next committee, but I would like to do that. I sit on the next committee, so.
Well, then that's one way to do it.
So I assure you I will be carrying that message, but I think we're doing a disservice to MDA. We already have a very limited budget when you look at the big picture, and I'm very much in favor of sending more money to Bowser in this endeavor of clean water. I think they're the people that know how to do this work on the ground, and that's really what the people of Minnesota voted for, was getting this work done on the ground, and they are the people that know how to do that. So I'm certainly very much in favor of the funding, but I'm having trouble with where we're robbing Peter and where we're paying Paul.
And Representative Torgerson, I will confess that's one of the first things I was telling people in my office is I think we have to be, not that we have turf wars, but we have to be careful. If I had my world in the proper order, I'd have Bowser over here in our division because I think they're more ag-related than they are environment-related, first of all, if we ever realign committee assignments and in fact, we can put you over there in those empty office buildings that we're looking at in Department of Ag. I do worry about that, too. We talked to agriculture about this. They also, the department understands the critical need for this because we just don't move forward on our feedlot program without that money. I agree, as Representative Eakin said, the G16 had strong recommendations for Bowser. I think the committee, Environment Committee, right or wrong, but the debate you're going to have over in the next committee is they decided that while they agreed with a lot of the stuff that the G16 recommended, that geographically it was a balance that was mainly skewed towards rural Minnesota. And so they cut way back on the recommendations to get more projects in the metro and suburban areas of the state. Whether we agree with that or not, that was one of the considerations, but certainly you can tear apart that budget when you look at it and actually ask how much is going in any one direction or another. So the other thing this amendment does is take it out of the TMDL grants, which is kind of similar, BMP. The BMP monies, which is, again, working with the department, we asked them if there's a better spot than another. So we're not affecting our FTEs or any work that's done in the department. It's simply the grant money that goes out, and this is similar kind of grant money that go out to our growers. So maybe we can make that argument at this point that, it's a priority to at least ag people to get our farmers going on some of these feedlot upgrades. But that's some of the comments on that. Any other discussion of this amendment? What do you think, members? Oh, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Large farms have been in compliance for many years. Just clarification, this is for under 300 animal units. Is that correct, either to the testifier or to Representative Eakin?
Chairman, Representative Hamilton, this language here would not condition it to limit it to a specific animal unit number. Previously, the legislation and our policy was up to 1,000 animal units. Then, of course, legislation 2 years ago limited it to 300. And, some can argue about what's big and what's small, but this would allow it to be used in those that were of any size based on pollution potential.
Representative Hamilton?
No, thank you.
And do we get requests for that? I mean, I'm talking specifically, like I think Representative Hamilton was, to the cost share program. Does anyone qualify for that, or is it only for under 300 animal units, because I think that was the intent of most people, is to keep it. So we're assuming, and frankly, I'm in that boat. I have 1,000 animal unit barns out there owned by Jenny O Farms. But I think they have the capacity to do their own upgrading if they need to and keep things in proper order. And I think it'd be difficult for some of us to see those larger units, right or wrong, be getting that money. So can you help us with that? Who, your standard funds go to farms over 300 animal units now?
Mr. Chairman, members, no, they do not. In fact, all of our funds in the past biennium went to all of them under 300 because that's what legislation prescribed. You know, one thing that is in this language here that it does put an emphasis on leveraging federal funding, and EQIP is one of the primary ways that we take the state money and stretch it by using that federal money. And their standard is they don't have the same standard of 300. They typically look at things up to 1,000, but we've prioritized on the smaller scale or smaller end of that when we've had the opportunity. Last year we did not because the legislation limited us. So we have considered projects up to 1,000 when we have shared our resources with the federal dollars. But other than that, we've always stuck to the 300.
Or is that Magna? Oh, you're not?
Oh, I thought you said Magna.
All right. I mean, members, I guess that's part of the discussion here. Do you want to limit it to 300 and under like we do now, or do you want this to be available for any size that has a water quality problem looming? Representative Eakin?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I guess I would prefer that it be under 300 animal units myself. As you had said, I think, you know, some of the larger operations do have the wherewithal to implement these programs themselves. But, I mean, the larger issue, obviously, is the quality of the water. But my preference would be that it be under 300 animal units.
Mr. Sullivan, is that easy to correct in here, either affirming it applies to current law or adding just the 300 or less animal unit? You can just do that, or do you have some suggestions for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, if that's the will of the committee, on the A3 amendment, page 1, line 8, the end of the line after feedlot water quality improvement grant, add to operations with 300 or fewer animal units and prioritize by pollution prevention potential, or that last clause could be removed.
Okay. I think Representative Eakin would incorporate that. So that's in there now, so we're hitting that 300 or less. Any other discussion to the amendment, members? Otherwise, Representative Eakin renews his motion. The A3 amendment, I recommend a pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Passes. And carry that message over there strongly that we'd like to see. I'm serious, too, because that was the first thing I said was, you know, we shouldn't be doing a whole lot of Bowser funding unless Bowser's part of our budget, and they're not. And I think, I know they had that discussion. Representative Eakin is very supportive of the G16 recommendations that came out, and frankly, that's a pretty diverse group that made, I think, some good recommendations. And it's my opinion that Bowser does a good job of putting projects on the ground and keeping the overhead costs down out there, too. The next one is also a recommendation for Bowser, so we'll see how this goes. Again, Representative Eakin, I believe, will move the A4 amendment for now, and I'll talk about it briefly myself because I'm. Again, we've had this discussion with the department, and I don't know where their money should come from, and we may have the department come back up here and visit with us a little bit of Department of Agriculture. We may have to change this somewhat based on their recommendations if we move forward with it. The department right now is doing a number of projects that involve drainage and tiling and other things, the Department of Agriculture. And Board of Soil and Board of Water and Soil Resources is interested in taking a lot of the research, whether it's university-generated or Department of Ag or others, and taking it out to the farm on a practical basis. So applying that research in actual field settings, the way I understand it, you can certainly explain a little more about this amendment. Now, again, this one, and Mr. Jasky, I can tell you honestly the concerns that came up were that this really was for personnel over in Bowser, and that's crossing more of a line than you know a lot of us might have been comfortable with crossing. I had made the suggestion to some that perhaps we change this language to a grant to to monies to the Department of Agriculture in consultation with the Department of Board and Soil Water Resources to deliver this type of project. So it is done within the realm of the Department of Agriculture, but I know there's been ongoing conversation since that idea came out too. And but again, to address what Representative Torkelson said and what I agree with is I really would hate to get down the road of funding personnel over in Bowser, additional personnel. You know, if this was buying tile or intakes or putting out grants for folks to collect information, et cetera, that's one thing. But if we're actually funding two or three FTEs in Bowser to do this, I think that's another. So I guess I'd ask for your comments on this project, Mr. Jasky, and then I'd ask the department to comment, too, on, you know, if it would be better if the money came to you and your personnel in consulting with theirs do this project, and you'd be have the ability then as the Department of Ag to control the money, and if you wanted to give grant them money in part or whole to do this, that would then at least keep it under our control. We're not just sending money to another division. So first of all, to the project and what's involved here with the money, Mr. Jasky, and then Mr. Martin, if you can comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding was that on the previous amendment as well, that because of the language there in the first line about a transfer, this money does go to the Department of Ag, and then they transfer the interagency agreement to us with conditions that they prescribe and we agree to. So Mr. Martin can speak to that a little bit later. To the point of the A4 amendment, this is for projects that would go in grants to public drainage authorities. That's our counties and our watershed districts. And they're the ones that manage these systems. They're, you know where they are. They're the ditches and the major tile lines that the field drains, the private and ditches and tile lines connect to. And what we would do is use the drainage work group, which the Department of Agriculture and various agricultural interest groups are part of, and we coordinate and facilitate. They would be the ones to select the projects that would get funded under this grant program. So it is not about Bowser agency staff. It's about grants to the public drainage authorities, because we know that many of those systems have been identified as potential contributors to some of the water quality issues we got to deal with. We want to build these kinds of projects into those systems as we go forward. And I think this is a good start on that. It is just a start. It's a really small amount of money for project work, but I think we can be very successful using the research that the Department of Agriculture and University of Minnesota and others have put together. And now we've got to show them how we can do it on a grander scale.
And before you comment, Mr. Martin, the other reason I kind of like this amendment is, frankly, I believe, and this is my opinion, that when you say the word drainage over an environment committee, not your committee, but the Environment Finance Committee, I got to make sure I'm not picking on Chairman Eakin here, but over in the Environment Finance Committee, it's just a bad word. Why, you know, no one wants to talk about it, no one understands it, and I think we know as rural ag people that drainage can actually help improve water quality if it's done correctly. If you're bringing the water through the soil as a filter rather than running it off into ditches and other things, if it's done correctly, it's a very good tool for clean water, and they don't ever want to put their resources into it, which is why you see research being done over here in the Department of Agriculture and in Bowser and others. So, you know, I would hope we'd look favorably on this, at least initially here in our discussion, and think about that, again, is this a way that we can affirm that not all tile is bad, Representative Magnus?
No, I certainly agree with you, Mr. Chairman. All the tile work we're doing here beneficial for the most part. But the question I've got for the testifiers, is this similar, is the A4 amendment similar to the A3? Does this leverage any federal funds?
Mr. Jasky?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, it doesn't specifically say that. Certainly we would pursue that, but at this point there isn't a specific federal funding source, so like we identified the feedlots where we could line up. Now, we would pursue that, but we obviously can't guarantee it at this point. I would say, though, that the public drainage authorities themselves do have revenues that they collect to manage those systems, and I'm almost certain that those that would be getting these funds would be asked to contribute an in-kind portion of their resources to get project dollars that are coming from this appropriation.
Representative Magnus, I think it would be a good amendment to add that these dollars should be given priority to projects that can leverage non-state funding, so that at least as those authorities are coming for, I think you've hit on something there that makes sense.
Well, my question, Mr. Chairman, because as I looked at these amendments initially, these three, A3, A4, and A5 amendments, and then sat down and looked at the funding we had available here under that fourth paragraph here of the Bill 2301. In what I did was I started out with a $1.5 million available the first year, and if we take these funds out, all of a sudden we've got $275,000 available for loans. Not grants. These are basically, as I understand it, basically loans coming back and into the program. We can use them, and I thank the department for putting out the fact sheet here. I've been looking at this in FOI 08 and 09, at $2.5 million available in the Clean Water Legacy and covered these 20 counties here. I'm trying to sort all this through here. Looks like we're going to go from $1.25 million down to $275,000 the first year, and that's a concern I have as we look at the question I have here is how are these programs here that this Clean Water Legacy funding from last biennium was being used, 145 projects, and frankly a lot of my septic systems, but how this all is going to sort through is we try to figure out what to do here. Mr. Chairman, you and other members have talked about the concerns of moving basically our money into Bowser, and that's certainly a concern of mine, and I served on the Environment Finance Committee before too, and I know how things go there. They rob from us to pay for programs they want to do. We may not necessarily want to do. And I trust you, Mr. Eakin. You're a good legislator and a good friend to agriculture. And I know Representative Torkelson's on it and Representative Hamilton is on the committee. But you're outnumbered, folks, over there. And I've been through that dance before over there. And my concern is that we're taking money out of ag, and and I'm not sure we're going to be able to continue these programs, or if they do need to continue, and at what level. We're only leaving $275,000, so that's kind of where I'm sitting.
Mr. Martin, maybe you can talk about the program. First of all, does it fit what you're doing over there in the department, and then address whether it should be money to Board of Soil and Resources or money to Department of Agriculture in consultation with them, or if this goes forward, how would you like to see it, and where would you prefer the money come from if you had to make a choice?
Mr. Chair, members, if I start by saying that the Department of Ag and Bowser, we have a very good working relationship, and I actually serve as a member on the Board of Water and Soil Resources, so in terms of the goals of the project, I think they fit into what we're working. We have a long history working in ag research and ag drainage research specifically. We worked a lot on controlled drainage systems. Obviously, our preference would be to keep this money within the Department of Agriculture. Maybe the language could be an interagency agreement or in consultation with the board in working on this project. I think it fits probably better under the pilot project area rather than the ag BMP area. If you're looking for an area to draw it out of. I can't speak to the dollar amount. I haven't seen the project deliverables on costs. So, but I think we're moving to the next phase of ag drainage that we have conducted a lot of research. So we need to perhaps put some more pilot projects out in the countryside for people to see these systems, because we are going to be modernizing our drainage systems. We are now, and we will continue to modernize them in the future, whether it's controlled drainage or side limit controls. So the project's good. It would be best if the money's kept within the department and work in consultation with the board.
Representative Eakin, would that be all right if we told the staff to, number one, take it out of the pot number three, where it's pilot project grant, I don't think that matters to you. Make those subtractions and additions in the bill. And then, Mr. Sullivan, if you can word it so that it is money used, it's to the Department of Agriculture, which is all this money, and in consultation with the Board of Soil Resources for technical assistance and grants, blah, blah, blah. That's pretty easy to do, I would think, too. And then it stays under their control. And you might even want to put the language in there that may, so that they have the opportunity, if they don't have to do it, if it turns out it's a bad project or we don't find enough pilot projects out there that suit it, they may make that transfer of money for these projects in consultation with Bowser, I guess would be mine. Does that work for you, Representative Eakin?
Mr. Chair, that does work for me as long as the job gets done.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I do agree. I think drainage is important, and we have a lot of tile manufacturers and in this state, and you know, it's a big issue that I just don't think gets addressed enough.
Okay.
Mr. Sullivan or Reinholz, are you ready yet on that? Well, Representative Torkelson, while you're working.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the risk of repeating myself, I'm going to repeat myself. I need to practice this argument if I'm going to deliver it effectively at the next committee.
That's good.
Once again, we are robbing from our own baskets that have been depleted by sending funds over to DNR. I think it's a mistake. It goes against the Clean Water Council's recommendations, against the governor's recommendations, and against G16 recommendations. And it's not small dollars. We're talking millions of dollars that have been shifted around. And I think it's very disappointing, and I think that this money, while I'm very much in favor of the project, I'm very much in favor of the work that Bowser does. I think they've been underfunded by the other bills, and we need to look at ways where we can get that money back where it belongs.
And Representative Torkelson, again, I heard you the first time, which is why we changed this language. I would hope you'd be more comfortable. It totally stays in the department. The department does the project, may do the project. We're putting may in there in consultation with Bowser, because they've already got the researchers doing a lot of this work in the Department of Ag. So it would be, the way we're changing this in a minute with Mr. Sullivan, at least on this one, is to, unlike the last amendment, which just goes into Bowser for the cost share, this does go to the department then, and they utilize it the way they see fit under the pilot project. So it's not, we're not moving money out of the department on this one at all.
I agree with the changes on.
We'll make the change. Yeah, that's good. We like that. Hamilton, you should maybe practice a little bit too so you can get ready to go. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, the amendment would be on the A4 amendment, delete lines 2, 3, 4, and 5. Line 1.6, it would change to read page 1, line 14, after the period insert. Line 7 would be amended after 5, insert of this amount. So it would read, of this amount, $330,000 the first year and $330,000 the second year may be used for technical assistance and grants to establish a conservation drainage program in consultation with and insert the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the Drainage Work Group, and the rest would remain the same.
Okay. So it all stays home with Mr. Martin. Is that all right? Representative Eakin will incorporate those changes.
I'll incorporate that.
All right. Any further discussion on this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment's adopted. Thank you, members. I have two more here. One's a Faust and one's a Doty. I don't care who wants to discuss them and see how these play out. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
I believe you have the A6.
I have the A6 amendment.
A6 amendment.
So I'll move the A6 amendment and ask for a little bit of patience. When I met with Mr. Sullivan to draft this, I thought that we were talking about a grant program where this money was coming out of rather than a loan. And so I guess I'd like a little bit of help from the committee as to whether we want to find one of the other lines above that we can make it a grant program to take the money out of. Or if we're going to leave it as a loan, I'd like to increase the loan amount to at least $100,000. When somebody's buying a machine that's in the range of $200,000 or $300,000, to get a $20,000 no interest loan on a machine of that size purchase doesn't do much good. So I guess I'd ask the group as to which way they would rather see this go, or not at all, I guess. So.
I guess we can all talk about, but certainly I would tend to agree with Representative Magnus that it's better to have loans that then circulate back into the department. So once it's grant money, we lose it. If it's loan money, we keep it. Once it's paid off, it's back in our coffers to reuse again then. So if that's how the DMP loan program works, Mr. Reinholtz, I think it does. And
this way, I understand it. Let me briefly describe what I'm trying to or attempting to do here. And I don't know if everybody here is familiar with what variable rate fertilizer application equipment is or not. But what it allows the fertilizer companies to do, whoever's applying the fertilizer actually, to increase and decrease the amounts of N, P, and K, as well as micronutrients as they're driving up and down the field. So they can take soil samples that are done on a grid and plug that into a computer, as well as the yield results from the yield monitors that most farmers have in their combines today. And it puts all of that information into a computer, and based on that, it fertilizes every square foot, in theory, to the amount of fertilizer that is, so that it's produced, or it's fertilizing for the production capacity of that square foot. So in a typical field, even in the Red River Valley, you'll see a range of up to 50-60% in a field that looks uniform. And so in most of Minnesota, you have a range of anywhere from 100 to 300 bushels of corn in one field. And so rather than putting enough fertilizer in spots that can only produce 100 bushels of corn, putting enough fertilizer there for 300, you only put enough there for 100. So we're saving the farmer a lot of money by not spending money on fertilizer, and that excess fertilizer typically grinds up in the groundwater, especially the nitrogen, which is soil mobile. And so what we're trying to do is prevent that from happening, reduce the nitrogen that goes into the groundwater, as well as some of the other nutrients that would just wash off if there's a big rain or something like that. So that's what we're trying to do with this. And the machines that do this are most of them made down in Jackson, Minnesota, which would be a great spot to stop on our next ag tour. And so anyway, that's...
Jackson, you were Magnus.
Hamilton.
Oh, okay.
So that's what we're trying to do with this, and I think it has a fantastic impact on groundwater, reducing groundwater, nitrogen in groundwater anyway. So that's what I'm trying to do, and if everyone agrees with the loan, I'm fine with that.
So again, members, what this does is it just adds to the pot of money that we already have in the department, makes us eligible for a loan for this type of equipment. Frankly, it doesn't matter if this was in the clean water bill or not. We could have done this in our omnibus bill, but it came to us after that. And then again, it's up to the department and those administering what qualifies and what doesn't, and the parameters that they would send these loans out. But it does make it eligible for that type of a loan. So discussion. Representative Faust?
Yeah, I guess then if loan is the direction everyone would like to go, I'd offer an oral amendment to change that on 1.15, change that $20,000 to $100,000.
Well, you can incorporate that into your amendment if you want to.
I will do that.
Members, discussion. Again, it's more of a policy thing that will be carried in Representative Murphy's and doesn't really affect the dollars. It just makes one more thing eligible that the department can collect apps for and decide if that's usage of the money. Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And your Representative Faust, what about a co-op that would do custom application and use a machine for 2, 3, 4 years and trade it off? Would that be eligible under your amendment?
Representative Faust.
I guess the way the amendment is written, that it would work if they were buying used equipment as well, or if they traded a piece of equipment in for a new one. I guess that they could borrow this $100,000 as a part of the trade-in.
I would guess, Representative Anderson, in the department, when you sign the papers, if you sell that piece of equipment, your loan would be due immediately. Rather than 6 or 7 years, it would be due in 3 years or 2 years that you traded in. So the money would come back home. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to that same point, Representative House, on line 1.13, it says the person commits to using the machinery. Now, would this be to individuals only, or could other business entities use the phone program as well.
That's mainly for our co-ops that are buying this equipment. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it would be mostly companies that would be buying it. Certainly a lot of co-ops, but there would be private fertilizer companies as well. So persons might not be the best word there, and I guess that I would defer to.
I think for the attorneys, persons is all right. I assume that means businesses too. And in fact, most of this equipment would be purchased by our co-ops and others, Bill Bond's people who would be utilizing it. Representative Welty. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess maybe for clarification, I'd offer the oral amendment that says person or entity.
That makes it more clear. Mr. Sullivan, lawyer talk, what should it say?
Mr. Chair and members, person is a universally defined term in statute in Chapter 645. If it's not defined again in Chapter 117, in Chapter 17, then that definition prevails, and that definition does say that person includes bodies, corporate, politic, individuals. It's designed to be comprehensive, but as always, if the committee feels they'd like to clarify, after person on line 1.13, you could add or entity that.
Do you want to add that, Representative Falk? You an attorney?
No.
No.
Thank you.
Whatever the committee's will is, I just...
Representative Falk, do you want that in your amendment?
I think that based on the definition that Sullivan gave us, that we should be fine.
And we certainly have the intent here on tape. There's no question. Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chairman. And another technical question here on line 11, the purchase of variable rate equipment. A lot of co-ops lease these pieces because they're so expensive. What about the lease of one of these pieces?
Again, I would doubt that would apply to the program. I don't know if we have the BMP administrators in the room, but I don't know that they don't do, they're shaking their head, they don't do lease stuff. It's, you got to purchase. That's what the loan's for. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chair Duncan, and to Representative Phillips, have you spoken with the administrator or the potential administrator of this loan? Do you know what the terms and conditions of the loan will be? And do we give them the authority under this to set the terms and conditions of the loan?
I would assume that is what you would be doing, because I have not spoken to the
Mr. Sullivan can maybe clarify, but we're amending section 17.117 subdivision 11A, and I would guess that lays out the BMP loan program, and there's probably conditions and rules that have been established by the department already for that, but we don't have to spell out all the conditions and terms. That's already existing, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. The Ag BMP program is a little unique in that there are kind of some basic guidelines and statutes, and then the money is basically a pass-through to local units of government who have authority to decide which projects are eligible, given the broad criteria and statute. But yeah, the basic overall terms of the loans and things like that are spelled out elsewhere in the section.
So the department would have that already, Representative Welty, and it'd be their discretion to make sure they adhere to it.
Well,
Representative Magnus?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my point. As I understood it now, with this, it would be under the BMP program. It would be similar to conservation tillage equipment, as I would see it. And what you would do here, basically, is you would make a five... The department then would offer this program out to the counties. They would oversee it, approve the loans that a local bank would make at a low interest rate for 5 years for this piece of equipment. That's my understanding. That's the point I'm getting at. Is this the understanding of what our intent is with the amendment?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My intent would be not that it goes through the counties, but that it would go through the local banks somehow.
Mr. Sullivan, does the BMP, do you know, or Mr. Martin or someone, do they have the ability? You said it's fairly broad who they can make the loan to. I assume they could, if it's broad enough, they could make it through a banker, which I think is what Representative Magnus is getting to. You know, if it's a $300,000 piece of equipment, we're participating a third, but the bank and or dealer are going to have to pick up the other two-thirds of the loan. And so do you have the ability to make, just like our RFA program, to work with banks in that?
Mr. Chair, members, the question earlier, I did get a clarification about the term of the loan. The terms vary. It's up to the local lender. but they're up to 10 years.
But it's in conjunction with the bank.
Yes. In terms of the Ag BMT loan program, as was stated earlier, in terms of the department, it's broad what is eligible. The decision-making ability on what gets loans out really rests with the local unit of government. And as Representative Magnus referred to earlier, this is the first I'd seen this, but I think it would operate very similar to the conservation tillage equipment loans that we are conducting right now, that we offer right now. And I think this could fit. Also important to remember that the loans have to match the local water plan, a concern of the local water plan. So if there was concern about nutrient runoff in a watershed, perhaps an LGU would want to offer these loans to certain entities.
Should work. It's an interesting concept, and I like the idea, actually. I think it's interesting. I think we could see more of that in the future. If it's really affecting water quality and other things, we should be involved that way proactively in helping our growers do some of this stuff for our co-op. All right, further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Anderson.
Just thanks, Mr. Chairman. One last question. And can this be done already, then, using existing programs without this specific piece of legislation?
I don't think so, but Mr. Martin? I mean, we could add this language to that other section, but this will be, I think, specific to clean water activities and areas of the state that have those problems, so we're taking a proactive stance on those areas. But Mr. Martin, you talked about the conservation machinery loans.
Mr. Chairman, members, as it applies now, the only history we've had is financing conservation tillage equipment. I think that's primarily than your traditional tillage.
Tillage equipment, not application equipment. This would be different. Okay? Buffalo tail, yeah. All right. Very good. Thank you, Representative Faust, for the amendment and the amendments to the amendment, and that's before us. Members, to the A6 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That prevails. One more. I don't know how this one will do, but it's before us. So, Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was originally a bill which I carried because I came in contact with this project. It was an LCCMR project that didn't make the final cut for funding. But as I looked at this, it seemed to be something that kind of up our alley that we're needing here to kind of let Ag be in control of studying what Ag is doing to the environment. And so I think that this is really the proper home for this, and that's why I'm going to bring it again today. I have several changes, though, in light of what we've done here today, and if Mr. Sullivan could read the language, I would like to...
Representative Doty wants to incorporate some new language. Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair and members, the changes would be on the A5 amendment. Lines 2 and 3 would be deleted. Line 4 would now read page 1, line 14 before the period, so that would put it at the end of clause 3 in the bill. Line 5, the line 5 would, well, I guess I'd have to clarify, Mr. Chair, if this would read including without the amount appropriated, or if the amount would appear in the without the amount. Okay. Yep, that's how I had it. Thank you. So on line 1.5, the everything up until is 2 would be eliminated and replaced with word including. Monitor would be replaced with monitoring, and then the line would then read page 1, line 14 before the period, insert including monitoring agricultural non-point source pollution, and line 1.6, implement would be replaced with implementing, and implementing best management practices in sub-watersheds, and the rest would remain the same.
So we're just not assigning a dollar amount, we're just asking the Department of Agriculture to look at that. Mr. Martin, if you'd come down to... I know we're springing a lot of this on you suddenly, so I'm going to get you or your cohorts read on this.
some testimony? Is this something that you're comfortable doing within the department that could work out? It is ag-related, clearly, but it's in southeast Minnesota, too, which is, I don't know, that's David's and Brown. It's getting close to your area. I don't think it's your area. Maybe Poppy's got a little of that, and Friskowski. And,
Mr. Chair and members,
Mr. Martin,
we are familiar with this project. As was alluded to earlier, this was actually part of an LCCMR request that that we as a department put together to propose to be working in the river watershed. It's a very sensitive watershed in southeast Minnesota that's had a lot of attention, and we've worked with several partners, including county SWCDs and environmental organizations, about designing this project. Obviously, the LCCMR request didn't come through, and you know, I don't know about the dollar amount per se. There's a lot of things moving on this project right now, but I guess the bottom line is yes, we are able and ready to conduct
this
project.
And Mr. Martin, the way I read it, and I think it's important to note that it's to monitor ag non-port point pollution down there. I assume you're probably already doing that. This is more directive to continue doing that. Department, I assume you will be doing that.
Mr. Chair and members, the concept behind this project is yes, we have been monitoring waters in the area. This project is really designed, once again, where we're going back to, we have BMPs. Are the BMPs effective, and are they working? So the concept on this was, we always hear about size of watersheds, and this was really to look at some small watersheds, maybe 3-4 watersheds of 1,000 acres or 5,000 acres or even less, to measure what's actually coming off of the land, and then go in with intensively implement BMPs and actually see what works best and see what type of improvement we would get. I have Adam Bird here from our staff. He, as I referenced earlier, our one existing staff who is our impaired waters technical coordinator. He can speak more if there's more technical questions.
Introduce yourself and add a little colloquy to this.
Mr. Chair, as Mr. Martin said, I'm Adam Bird. I'm the impaired waters tech coordinator from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And as Mr. Martin pointed out, this is a project that we did in partnership with a number of organizations and submitted as an LCCMR proposal, and really the goal of this project was to look at a multiple scale type approach, looking at a small sub-watershed approach, but within that, nesting small fields to monitor as well. Really, the challenge we face in doing this is there's a lot of cumulative effects when you try to monitor at a large scale. So really trying to refine what happens at a small watershed scale and even within fields of those scales to refine what's coming off of agricultural systems in southeastern Minnesota.
Okay. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comments on this are a little different than my other comments, I'm not going to repeat myself a third time. So far in this clean water area of the constitutional amendment, we have resisted the temptation to entertain individual projects. I serve on Mary Murphy's committee, as I stated earlier, and in some of the areas we've taken testimony upon testimony from individuals who have lined up looking for a piece of the pie. And one night we went till 2 a.m. our time, really it was midnight Rocky Mountain time that night, and last night we were there till about 10 o'clock listening to a multitude of testifiers. I'm just afraid that if we open the door here with individual projects that are after this clean water money for the ag portion, that we too may end up in similar circumstances where we're entertaining many individual projects. While this project has great merit and I strongly support the project being done, the method that we use to approve these projects is one that I would have to question strongly.
And I would concur with that. I don't know if there's a way to word this differently or to make sure that we continue on it, or if you will do that without the amendment, I guess I'd like to hear from you there. And I did read Representative Wagenius' bill coming out, and I found it interesting. It's almost exactly like you said. It's mainly for larger grants and
so that departments and others are deciding where the money goes without specifying, to cut down on that. Except for one project in her bill, I believe there was a project for Duluth in there that I found curious, because that's the chair's city in Representative Genius's committee when it came out. I don't know if she was trying to get some favoritism with the chair for her bill or what. But
Mr. Chair, I believe I can enlighten you a bit on that. I had the same thoughts, but I did find out that there is some federal funding tied to that project, and it needs to be specifically endorsed soon, so the federal dollars come through. So
right.
There really was no attempt to treat the Chair Murphy in any special way.
All right, very good. Hope she doesn't hear the tape. Any, Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question, I don't know for Mr. Burr or Mr. Martin, the LCCMR declined to take on this project. Was there any rationale why they declined it, or was it just they didn't have adequate funding to accept this one as one of their new projects?
Mr. Martin or Burr?
Martin. Mr. Chair and members, I don't have a strong indication of why the LCCMR committee turned the project down. I've heard a representative Wagenius state that there was strong support amongst the legislative members, but there was some resistance on citizen members that these type of projects should just be funded within government.
So I guess are you done, Representative?
Just one follow-up.
Yeah, Representative
Chairman. Chairman. Just, I think I heard you say earlier, Mr. Martin, that this would give you the ability to assess some of the best management practices and to see how effective they are. Is that correct?
Mr. Martin?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
So, again, my question to follow up, are you going to continue working on this if we don't put it in the bill and earmark it, like Representative Torkelson said to Mr. Burr or Mr. Martin? I mean, this is something that isn't going away. I assume you've been working on it for a number of years now, and we'll continue to in the future. I guess I'm Representative Doty. I'm a little leery about earmarking too at this point.
Mr. Chair, members, in terms of the vision, when we put this package together, these are the type of projects that we had envisioned working on. I know that there's a temptation to,
right,
when we were going through our process of putting together our proposal of whether or not to put specific projects. We didn't want to go down the road. We'd rather said maybe it's best to do an RFP and a competitive process.
So this would maybe fall under that pilot project thing. You'd have the opportunity to do that if you internally desired to put out RFPs for that. I mean, we're really leaving it open to the department to pick which projects they think are priority, and if this is a priority, I think they can do it, is what I'm kind of hearing you say.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. This type of project would fall under the allocation for research and pilot projects.
Okay. With that in mind, Representative Doty, what do you think?
Mr. Chair, I think what you think.
I think we should.
I think we should withdraw this amendment. This is an excellent project. The area is well suited to very small contained things that they can work on and actually learn something.
Right.
It's a great project. I know we have support of Ag, and I think it belongs under the control of Ag.
I guess I worry about that too. I appreciate Representative Doty withdraws the amendment, and you're right, Representative Torkelson, we may have a 2:00 meeting next year if we entertain individual projects through the Ag department, even for that $9 or $10 million that we might get. We could have a long night, so I appreciate that insight. What do you got now? Representative Falk.
Thank you.
And I have a couple people want to testify too before we leave.
Sure. I still have some concerns with the amount of money we're putting towards staff and full-time equivalent. So with that, I'd like to offer the oral amendment on page one, line 14, after the period, or delete the period, add, no more than 15% of these appropriations may be used for administrative purposes or staff, period.
So in section 3 on the pilot project, we're limiting to 15%. We have 2.625 million total times 15%.
Mr. Chair, I do have the numbers if you would like.
How much is that then out of the total amount for?
In the first year, 15% of $875,000 would be $131,250. In the second year, the $1.75 million, it would be $262,500. That is 15%. The combination of those two is $393,750. But what it does is it if we're scaling out the project, if there's more money in the second year, we'd be adding staff equivalently when there's more funding instead of adding $400,000 worth of staff in the first year.
And I'm not totally disagreeing yet. I guess some of my questions, either Mr. Martin or others, or maybe Mr. Torkelson's more familiar. I assume there is some overhead allowed in a lot of these projects, and we probably have a history of that in LCCMR and others too, because there certainly is staff time and overhead that needs to be done. But I'm not sure if it's 15% or 20 or 25 or 5%. I'm not sure. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And these projects aren't just straight grant projects. These are research projects. These are pilot projects. They may involve utilizing researchers from within the department. They may utilizing people on the ground from within the department whose expenses would be, you're naturally going to have more expenses involved than you would with just a grant program where you're just administering a grant or administering a loan. So I think we're really kind of trying to tie the hands of the department here. They've done a good job in the past of being frugal with their funds. I don't really see any need for this amendment.
So Mr. Martin, maybe you can relive the discussion we had earlier and try and explain to us again. And what's really bothering him, and frankly me too, is why it isn't equal money both years, and why the first year you're going to ramp up with 4.25 FTEs. I get the problem that Representative Falk is having. If it was the second year, if it was 1.7 each year, or if it was, maybe it fits better, but your first year you're heavy loaded in staff, and your second year you're not so much. And I think that's the question we're having, is the division of the money maybe based on in comparison with the 4.25 FTEs we're adding both years.
Mr. Chair and members, I think while I represented that the new FTEs would be working primarily on research, I probably understated the importance of us having staff to work directly with other agencies. The Pollution Control Agency and DNR have significant additional staff resources, and we're asked as the department to interact with those individuals on a regular basis when they're going through a water, basically water monitoring data, load allocation. So while there's a need for research facilitation, there's also this need to interact on a technical basis with our sister agencies to make sure the plans are being put together in an equitable way that agriculture's role is accurately reflected. Mr. Stoddard could provide more. He's on a level where he's managing the folks who are working on this. Perhaps he could provide some additional insight too.
Mr. Stoddard?
Mr. Chair, as Commissioner Martin said, a lot of the work that we're doing here, especially on the TMBL part, it's more than just research. Most of the research that we're involved in is through an RFP where Mr. Bird does the RFP process in cooperation with a number of other parties. But then that information that we learn through this research needs to get into the hands of people who are actually developing the TMDLs out in Minnesota. And so we really don't have many staff. The number of environmental staff we have working on this right now who are funded is one. And then our other staff, I think we've got five or so in the agency, I'm not sure the exact number, who work on a number of different activities. We don't have resources specifically to participate in the TMDL development process where we get accurate technical information on the environmental impacts of farm practices in the hands of people who are developing the TMDL. So that's what this, these additional staff are for.
Can you address that? Again, I'm unclear, and I'm sure there's a good reason, or maybe there isn't. Why wasn't it $1.3 million a year instead of the way it's divided, $875 and $1.7? Why don't you just divide that in half for the 2 years at basically $1.3-something a year? Were you given a number from on high and you just made it fit, or what?
Mr. Chair, members, the original proposal we had was the numbers were equal each year. What happened in the process is we basically, revenue was projecting that first year collections were going to be much lower than second year collections, so that's why you see first year, second numbers are off.
Okay, so it's based on projections. I know we're just starting in July, the first month, and even most of the money, if it was available the first year, would be available towards the end of the first year of the biennium, once we're collecting more. But,
and Mr. Chair, if I could add, I respect the discussion here. We want to manage the FTEs we're adding to, because you know, we're very conservative and we've in terms of adding staff. But this is an area where we know that we need to interact more so with the other state agencies in terms of shaping how agriculture is going to be treated in the impaired waters process.
Okay. Further discussion. I guess I like, you know, I'm a jobs guy. I like adding jobs, and if the jobs are needed, I'd hate to limit that, Representative Falk. Because I think they were maybe not quite understanding, you know, the what this money is for in whole. It's not just like the sustainable ag grants or something where it's mainly money going out the door. I think a lot of this is going to be done internally, and I too am concerned that we don't have enough internal folks to handle this and work interdepartment. I think is a good point too, to bring the ag perspective to some of these other PCA in particular, and DNR also. Representative Tremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thought we had a hiring freeze, and every other committee that I sit on, we're cutting back. And so I'm all about ag, but I'm really concerned about how do I go to the next department, because they've been cut. And that's kind of where I'm at.
Hiring freeze. How is this be affected by that? Are you able to hire these people?
Mr. Chair, we are able, while there is a hiring freeze, we are able to make case for critical vacancies to fill, and I believe that the census is, would be considered new money to the budget that we would be able to fill these vacancies.
Okay. Further discussion? All right. Falk renews his amendment, his oral amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. I don't think it passes. Other discussion to the bill. And members, I appreciate this. I think it's good that we have our fingerprints on this as it goes over to Representative Murphy's committee. I do have two people. Mr. Peterson, is he still here? You want to come down? And Mr. Giesecke. Yeah. Clean water. How do your sales stand? Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll be very brief. Tom Peterson, Minnesota Farmers Union, and just appreciate you working through the process. They're supportive of this bill. Most of the core functions of this came out of recommendations from the very similar to the Clean Water Council. Of course, we're disappointed, as Representative Torkelson, who's been a part of the process on the Clean Water Council. And just, by the way, folks, too, for those of you not familiar with the Clean Water Council, it mirrors what was called the G16, where it had Farmers Union and Farm Bureau, and it took in broader recommendations from what was called the G40 group that started meeting several years ago, that had soybean growers and pork producers and milk producers. And they advised the G16 group, which helped put together the Clean Water Legacy bill, which is all a part of this. And then the legislation created the Clean Water Council, which didn't allow lobbyists on it, which is fine with me. But, you know, so we had good people like Representative Ferguson. We have Scott Hazy, who's a Farmers Union president, a dairy farmer on it, and developed these recommendations. And so recognizing we've been trying in very hard in the environment committees to get that those dollars to Bowser, and we're disappointed that they didn't come through, and appreciate to working with Representative Eakin to come up with the dollars that are necessary. And just real quick, too, I mean, I think our Commissioner Martin did a very good job emphasizing the needs for agriculture, and it is very important. As we're going from 14 to 85 TMDLs, we have our farmers are getting involved in the TMDLs. We're trying to educate them. We formed a coalition with a lot of the different groups that are part of a coalition to get farmers involved in these TMDLs, but then they have to have the information. And we're seeing, like, I'm thinking of one TMDL, I can't remember the name of it, but I know our farmers, when they're involved in it and reading it, they, you know, they had the word assumption in it like 33 times. And dealing with feedlots and fecal coliform coming from feedlots, and in the county where it was, there wasn't any dairy farms where it was blaming dairy. And so there's a lot of these things where I think the information is going to help that this bill is working for too. And thanks for your time.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Chris Raddatz, Director of Public Policy for Farm Bureau. And not on your agenda, but if I could just make a few comments. I really appreciate you holding the hearing today and having this discussion. We need to keep this committee fully engaged in the clean water activities that are occurring as it relates to agriculture. There is a separate committee, as you know, you've referenced Chairman Murphy's committee, but I think it's critical that this committee really gets engaged in these issues. And I think some of the discussion has been great about, you know, where the money's going to go and how it's going to be used. And hopefully a year from now, you can bring in the folks and we'll have the experience of the project. And I think one of the things to remember on this issue of hiring, I think I'm right, part of the constitutional amendment said that the new revenues coming in cannot supplant existing funding. And I think that's where you can hire in some new folks dealing with clean water, and hopefully that answers some of the questions. But I, again, appreciate the hearing. It won't be the last you'll hear of it. You'll hear more about it on the floor. We just need to make sure agriculture and this committee is fully engaged in the discussion. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Raddatz. Mr. Giesecke.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I'm Tim Giesecke. I work for my business, Ag Resource Strategies, and I'm here discussing the Livestock Environmental Quality Assurance Program that a consortium of agriculture organizations headed by the Minnesota Milk Producers began a pilot project a couple years ago. My discussion today, brief discussion, will be to for you to consider expanding and extending the pilot project, and basically I'll tell you the value of that. In essence, it provides a public-private partnership to assess on-farm resources. Livestock producers don't have that opportunity available as convenient as this. The program I manage trains public and private sector to get them on the farm to assess the whole farm. Whole farm resource assessments are not available from the public at this time. This assessment that addresses soil, water, air, plants, and animals can provide the farmer with a quick itemized list of what they could do, the BMPs, to improve their farm operation. It also provides value to the local conservation agency because they can bring that menu to them as well. So it helps the farmers step into the conservation delivery system that we currently have and provide by the conservation professionals the understanding of what that farm needs without actually taking that first costly step. We use agriculture professionals often and public conservation district staff to do that first assessment. This whole farm assessment then provides them with the list and a menu of items that they could implement on the farm. It allows them to enroll into federal and state programs and leverage that federal dollars. And one other piece it provides that isn't in existence today is a 5-star rating. And what really that does is give the farmers an end goal. We have a lot of conservation programs out there, but we don't really have a defined end goal for the farmers to achieve. So this gives them a starting point with the assessment and an end goal that was developed by Minnesota Milk, Livestock, Minnesota Cattlemen Association, the state agencies, and local government to decide on this 5-star end goal. But with that beginning and that end goal, now the conservation programs available start making sense to the producer, what they can do and what they could do, and it puts the bookends, as I say, on the whole books of conservation programs. That piece went absent about 20 years ago in our government delivery system. The industry stepped forward with the state agencies and redeveloped those bookends to help organize the farmer's thoughts as they manage resource assessment.
Very good. Any questions? And we do appreciate that. I think this is a discussion we'll continue to have next year, too, and how we seamlessly go from informing farmers better on conservation practices that may be beneficial to their farm, to where the resources are, to get money, to ultimately getting to a star farm, five-star farm rating if they so desire to move that way. So it's I think it's an interesting concept. I know it's one that Bowser heard about at their annual meeting this last summer, and it's one we continue to work on. So
I should mention we have partnered with the Department of Ag. They provide the funding for this pilot project, and hope for their continued support.
All right. Further discussion to the bill as amended. I renew the motion House File 2301 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's adopted. Representative Torkelson moves the minutes of April 7th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, members, we're done for today. There will be a few more meetings, I think, on some bonding bills, perhaps, to look at those for the upcoming year and anything else that may come before us. So we'll let you know when the next meeting is, or maybe a tour or two when the weather gets nice out to the Minneapolis Veterans Home or something. We had some suggestions, as you know, during the committee process to maybe do some of that if we get some time after the bills get off the floor. So we'll take a look at that, too. Otherwise, we're adjourned.